For the longest time, I've always been super curious and interested about decision making. Why is decision making so important? Let's think about it from a work perspective. A recent McKinsey study has shown that 40% of leaders' time is spent making decisions. Think about that for a second. 40% of their time. From big decisions, small decisions, quick decisions, well thought out decisions. So important. Welcome to another episode of the Learn It All podcast, where great leaders aren't born or made. They're constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, and I'm also the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million individuals over the past 30 years. In today's episode, I'm going to share with you 9 common mistakes people make when it comes to making decisions. Let's get started. All right. Number 1 is rushing decision. This is one I make all the time. Let's say you get excited. You're looking to hire somebody. They come in. They have a great first interview. And instead of doing your due diligence, you just pull the trigger and you hire them. Fast forward 3 months, and this person is the wrong fit for your team. Rushing decisions is an easy pitfall to avoid simply by taking a step back and really thinking things through. Don't jump at your first instinct. Ask other people, get other options, and give it some time and really think through the decision. And also think about what happens if you make this decision and 6 months later, how are you going to get yourself out of it? I like to call it purposeful awfulizing. What I mean by purposeful awfulizing, look at the decision you're making and fast forward a year and think about the worst case scenario. How easy is it to get yourself out of that scenario? If it's kind of rough, if it can get you in a lawsuit, if it may not be the best interest for you or your family, then really think it through and maybe even consider other options before jumping into it. Pitfall number 2, getting stuck in decision paralysis. We've all been there before. Let's say you know it's the right thing to do. Let's say you've done all your due diligence and you still can't pull the trigger. Why is that? Is it because you're afraid? Is it because maybe you're not confident in yourself? One piece of advice that I like to follow that I want to share with you, Jeff Bezos of Amazon says that if you have 70% of the facts of the information, pull the trigger and move forward. You're never going to have 100% of all the facts. And if you wait too long, guess what? You might lose out. Take, for example, and this has happened to me many times, right? We have a great candidate and we want to move forward with them. They've checked all the boxes. And then somebody on my team would come to me and say, you know what? But maybe we should interview 1 or 2 more people. Let's be even more thorough. And that great candidate you have doesn't wait, and they move on, and then you lose out because they take a job somewhere else. The same thing can happen with rolling out a new product. If you wait too long to getting to the market, somebody could beat you there. So don't get stuck in decision paralysis. If you've done your homework and you have at least 70% of the information, move forward and make it happen. Let's move on to number 3, and this one can be a little tricky. Hear me out here. It's not clearly defining what success looks like for the decision. All right, so think about it this way. Let's say that you have a team together and you got to move forward on a certain product or something, and you haven't clearly defined to the team really what the goals, what success would look like. So people come in, they think about it from their perspectives, they do their research, you get together, and then you make a decision. And the decision fails. And a lot of times what I've seen is people come back and say, well, I thought the goal of this decision or this product was to do this, this, or that. And at that point, you might reflect to yourself and say, no, we wanted to actually have this happen. So if you haven't clearly defined what success looks like for your team, and maybe even sometimes for yourself, that can definitely lead to failure. Number 4 is very common, and it's failing to consider what the risk is if the decision fails. Think about it for a second. If you're at dinner and you're trying to figure out what you want to have for dinner, who cares? If you make the wrong decision, it doesn't matter. But if you're thinking about pulling your kid out of school or acquiring a company and you make these decisions without really determining what the risk is, that could be huge. And that takes me back to, again, purposeful awfulizing. Looking at what the worst case scenario can possibly be in a year from now or two. And if that happens, how do you overcome it? One of the things that I like to do, and I learned about this through Farnham Street, which is a great blog, is having a decision journal. So a lot of times if I have important decisions to make, I like to journal about it and write down, okay, well, here's what I'm trying to accomplish, and then try to identify any blind spots along the way. So as I get it all down on paper and look at it, if I feel comfortable, like we talked about before, if I have enough information and I move forward with the decision because I know I can handle the risk, even if it fails over time, let's say I go back to my decision journal and I kind of look at what I wrote down, and you could learn from that, right? And say, that's happened to me before. I went and moved forward with a outsourced accounting firm, which turned out to be miserable. One of the risks that I put in there, and I didn't think it a big one at the time, was they weren't really timely on returning calls. And I circled that. Well, guess what? That turned out to be a major problem over the 18 months I worked with them, was just getting a hold of people there, especially in critical times. Keep in mind, when it comes to considering risk, and hopefully before and afterwards, having a decision-making journal can really help you moving forward. Number five is getting stuck in binary thinking. What do I mean by that? It's pretty simple. You have a decision ahead of you, yes or no, or I go with this choice or this choice. By having only two choices, you drastically reduce your chance for success. Studies have shown that if you add even a third choice, your chance for success goes up to 64%. 64% better chance of having a successful outcome if you have three choices. Some studies say that you should have six choices for every decision that's important. You might say to yourself, well, it's kind of difficult. A lot of times decisions can be yes or no, this or that, this person or that person. One of the ways I've overcome that is I've gotten creative and kind of thought out of the box. A lot of people come to me and say, well, when it comes to binary thinking and binary decisions, that's a tough one because in these situations, they feel like there is only a yes or no answer or this person or that person, that there are limited options. But I bet if you get creative, and maybe even if you're curious and ask other people, think out of the box. And in doing so, you can create, and even maybe if they're not the best options, there's still more options. Have different options and more ideas, and that will help you look at these challenges and these decisions and give you more clarity and definitely, like I mentioned before, help you improve your decision making and have a better chance of success. Number six is a great one, and it's treating the symptom instead of the cause. All right, so I got a great story that highlights an example of solving for the root cause. This one company, they'd have year over year, they'd have two or three wrongful termination suits, and these suits would cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the executive team would get frustrated, and they'd say, we don't have good enough lawyers, you know, we don't have enough insurance. And so they originally went out and they wanted to find better lawyers to defend themselves. Well, somebody who's relatively new to the executive team said, you know what the issue is here? We're solving for the symptom instead of the root cause. Why are we having so many wrongful terminations? So at that point, they all agreed, what can they do differently? And what they decided on doing differently was upskilling their managers. If they could have better managers who are better equipped to be leaders and do everything from better support their team and coach their employees to even just hiring better talent, that would be a proactive approach so they wouldn't have to have all these terminations, which eventually would lead to wrongful termination. So that's an example right there of really understanding the difference between solving for a symptom instead of a root cause. There's a great book out there by Dan Heath called Upstream. I could not recommend it more. It's all about solving for a root cause over the symptom. Number seven is one of my favorites, and it's being blinded by biases. Let's just stick with the most common one, confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is when you set out to find people who agree with you, right? So say, for instance, you really want to move forward with a particular candidate, you know, and instead of getting and reaching out to others who might have an alternative opinion on why you should go with a different candidate to hire, you want to find people who, let's just call them yes men, who will tell you what you want to hear. And sometimes, subconsciously, you're putting yourself in a position of failure. That is one of the number one reasons why it's incredibly important to have a diverse team. Because if you have a diverse team, if you have people of different genders, different ages, different backgrounds, then people are going to think differently and they're going to have different ideas. And if you prevent yourself from having confirmation bias and you're open to hearing different people's opinions and ideas, it's going to drastically increase your opportunity for success in your decision making. Number eight is making decisions in the silo. Think about this for a second. Let's say you're looking to roll out a new CRM for your sales team. All right, so in this particular situation, all you do is you sit down with your CRO, your sales managers, and maybe even some of your sales executives, and you talk through to them, with them, like, hey, here's our options, here's what we want to do, and you're not considering anybody else in the organization. You're not thinking about how it will impact the marketing team or the IT team or whomever else, right? So this is an example. If you move forward with just the opinions and advice and recommendations from the sales team, you're alienating everybody else. And once you make that decision and move forward with the software and or the CRM, it could have negative impacts on the other parts of the organization that might be too late for you to figure out after it's already been made. So when it comes to avoiding making decisions in the silo, really think through who's going to be impacted by this decision. Sure, number one, primarily, is the sales team, right? Because they're the one who is in the CRM all the time. But you have the marketing team who may be supporting the sales team. So it's important to them what they think. And if IT has to manage it, get them involved. So avoid making decisions in the silo by really thinking through from a holistic perspective who it's going to impact. And in doing so, you can definitely avoid this pitfall. And number nine, last but definitely not least, don't fall for making emotional decisions. I'm famous for this one, right? You're all fired up, whether it's good or bad, and you just jump and you make a decision, and then you realize too late that it's the wrong decision, and a lot of times you have buyer's remorse. So the best thing to do when it comes to this, take a step back and maybe even label your emotions. Why are you feeling the way you're feeling? And are you in the right state to actually make the decision right now, right? So give it some more time, think it through, and avoid making emotional decisions. Look, I get it, that's a lot. That's nine different pitfalls, mistakes that people make all the time when it comes to decision making. My recommendation for you is take some time, maybe go back and listen to this podcast. And what you can do is think about times you put yourself in one of those situations, how you've handled it, how you could do it differently next time. Also, when it comes to decision making, I've mentioned some great books, and I also co-wrote a decision making book called Good Decisions Equal Success with my fantastic business partner, Candace Porter. So I hope you got value out of today's episode. And if you do, please do me a favor, rate and review. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning.